Welcome to the Speak As Well As You Think podcast, brought to you by Vautier Communications. I'm your host, Jen Alex, and the goal of this show is to uncover communication strategies and behaviors that you can use to improve the way that you show up and perform at work. We'll talk about what effective communication looks like in action so that you can apply it to your own career. If you'd like a written summary of each episode, subscribe to our weekly email newsletter by visiting vautiercommunications.com. Welcome back to another month of the Speak As Well As You Think podcast. And now that we're in the second month of the year, we wanted to go through and talk about improvement and practice strategies for our communication skills. Some of you will have just taken a program with us either last month or in the last couple of weeks before this episode is coming out. So I think this is great to have another 10 months in front of you that you can begin to practice and put some of these implementations into place. One of the places I always love to start is back with James Clear. He had a quote that said, "When choosing a new habit, many people seem to ask themselves, what can I do on my best days? The trick is actually to ask yourself, what can I stick to even on my worst days?" He recommends you need to start small, master the art of showing up, scale up when you have the time, energy, and the interest to do so. John, you've been doing this for a very long time alongside me, and I'd love to have you start with some of the recommendations you have on practice and implementation.
Sure. Yeah, it's a fun topic. It's something that everybody asks or everyone's interested in. And it doesn't even just relate to communication skills. Of course, we're talking about that through the podcast and what we do professionally. But right, if you're trying to create a new habit of being more organized or create a new practice of finishing your last meal at 6 p.m. and not having anything else the rest of the night, it's little incremental wins that are going to be the huge advantage. And so even in our courses, when we coach these communication skills, once we introduce whatever the new skill is, we'll often ask the participants, practice application right away. Mm-hmm. And so that's the whole learning by doing model is, it's important that you see whatever the behavior is being done to some extent. But we like to highlight, don't do it the exact way that we're doing it, because you want it to be genuine, you want it to be sincere, you want it to be authentic. But when we get to longer form practice, I like to encourage, pick low-hanging fruits. Pick one or two key things that you'd like to be mindful of or focus in on for this activity or for mm-hmm. this exercise or for this video recording. But people saying, I need to improve at all of it, or I want to get better at everything. Yes, I understand in theory what that means, but I do feel like that leaves the student, if you will, overwhelmed trying to think about too much at once.
Yeah.
And if we can pick one to two things that we can identify, this video recording, I want to increase my volume. This video recording, I'd like to practice my eye contact, starting and finishing with one person. Whatever the skill is, of course, I'm talking through communication skills, but being mindful and having awareness around the one or two things is really where you start to see some of those gains being obtained over the course of longer term.
And I know in a previous episode, we've talked about that implementation dip, where anytime you learn a new skill, physical skill, doesn't matter what it is, there is a period of things feeling worse before they start to get better. And when we try and, like you said, pack everything in, I want to be better in 10 areas. When you're trying to focus on 10 areas, that implementation dip is going to feel even bigger. And then all of a sudden you feel like, gosh, now I can't do anything right. And I should just revert back to what I was doing, because at least it was a whole lot smoother than it is right now.
Yeah. And I love the implementation dip theory. And I think so much of it has to do with, does the person assess where they are first?
Yeah.
And I think this is something that can sometimes feel skipped. Or when I ask the question to participants who have gone through experiences with us, have you ever been through an experience like this before? If they say no, my face lights up, because it's eye-opening for them to, one, get an assessment first. Where am I in relation to these skills on a spectrum, from incredibly effective to not very effective?
Yep.
But if you don't assess where you are first, then you're trying to hit a moving target. You don't really know where your opportunities for development are. You don't really know where you might lack in certain areas or where gaps may exist based on what your audience may see and hear from you. So this assessment piece is so critical as you think about practicing or implementing new techniques, new skills, new habits. And that's where I'd encourage any of our listeners to start. If you've not been through a program with us before, the opportunities to assess your skills are endless right now with the technology we have available. Every one of us has smartphones that we can hit record, throw the camera back on us, and just talk for 90 seconds about something you're passionate about. Then go and assess what you just saw and heard. And that's where you can at least get a baseline and say, all right, here's my starting point. Now I can start to figure out where are areas that I feel I could develop, or I could get more effective, or I can have more impact for my audience, whatever those things could be.
Yeah, and John, this is something that you mention in your courses often that I've kind of taken for my courses as well as outside in the lacrosse that I coach at both different levels. And that's by the end of day one or by the end of the time you're learning these new skills for the first time, it feels a lot like you're trying to tap the top of your head and rub your stomach at the same time. That's what you're saying, where if you're not assessing yourself, you don't know how to manage doing both of those things at once. And again, in your brain, as you're thinking about tweaking and changing all of those different little things, it becomes a little bit harder. Taking a step back and looking at it outside of communication skills, because again, I'm sure there are plenty of people who have taken our courses or have taken them in the past couple weeks, even, but I'm sure there's even people here who are saying, how can I use these tips outside of communication skills with other skills that I may have? For me, the number one thing comes down to the habits. A lot of you are trying to build skills in one bucket or one silo of your life, but those skills are implemented in many, many, many other places. Looking at it from that communications aspect, we talk about how the hands coming together is a lot because we have phones in our hands every single day of our lives, and that's what feels comfortable. When I transition over to that lacrosse sector, we have kids that are coming in as football players. A lot of them come in with the weight training, the endurance training, the stamina that they need to play football, not really realizing the difference that occurs on a lacrosse field from the overall cardio, from the muscle groups that they're using. And that happens with us where what John was saying on that assessment piece, we do that at the beginning of the season. Our preseason lifts, we say, hey, we know that you have football lifts, you have lacrosse lifts. This is that point in which we change and we try to target different muscle groups. Because again, if you're not targeting those before the season, it's very hard to build those skills on the field utilizing those different muscle groups. It's very much the same thing we see in communications. If you're not able to utilize the hands or the posture or the eye contact in a one-on-one conversation across a dinner table with a significant other, it's going to be significantly harder to use those skills up in front of a stage talking about business content in front of 20, 30, 40, 50 people.
And as both of you just mentioned, you can't go after and change a habit until you know how it exists right now. And so that's why having these assessments is so important. For a lot of people, we're one, either our own worst critics, where you get done with a talk and you say to yourself, that was terrible, I bombed that. And you're just building all this extra stress and anxiety on yourself because we have an idea in our own head of how things come across. Or two, you think you crushed it, you were a rock star, and then you get feedback that perhaps you weren't. And then there's this gap in either becoming defensive where you say to yourself, no, I did a great job. Your feedback is irrelevant. And that can be really hard moving forward in terms of creating a good relationship with the colleagues or managers that you work with, or all of a sudden you get this crushing feeling of, well, shoot, I thought that went really well, and now I'm getting feedback that it didn't. So being able, as Matt said, to step outside of yourself, in our case, see yourself through your audience's eyes. Be able to take a back seat or a seat in the audience and say, okay, here's what I look like and sound like. Here's how I went through my message. Here's where things started to fall apart a little bit or get confusing, whatever the thing is, and then you can start to go after and change it. But to Matt's point, if you have no idea that you stand with your hands up in what we call the box or your mid-core, you can't start to put them down if you don't know where they are right now, because those two things, they just don't match up.
And that's really part of the beauty around going through what we call shared experiences. And that would be going through a training program with peers, with colleagues. When these types of courses present themselves, we encourage people, make sure you step out of your comfort zone and get into that. Because just as Jen mentioned, the passive practice is equally as important as the active practice. Yes, you going up and doing the thing is huge, but it's so valuable as a participant to sit in the audience and watch all of the things that you just went through in terms of physical skills, vocal skills, organization of a message. Where did you take the audience on this slide? But when we think about the whole puzzle of an effective communicator, it's their physical skill set, their vocal skill set, and then how they take an audience through a message. They may have one idea of how that's going to happen, and then the audience has an entirely different view or perspective on how that was actually received. But if you don't go through some type of shared experience where you can really lean on other individuals to be able to do both the active and the passive side, I think there's a lot of meat you're leaving on the bone to be able to say, okay, did I make changes? Or, Jen, as you just mentioned, was I open to receiving real feedback? I think, yes, it's going to make you feel vulnerable, but as you made the comment earlier, most often we as the individual are our own worst critic. So if you're only working by yourself or only giving yourself really tough feedback, I think you leave a lot open to what might others feel and see or see and hear based on what's happening in the front of the room or happening from a communication standpoint.
And that's the big piece is what might others see and hear? I want to bring it back even to the numbers of it. Most of us in our everyday lives and our business roles are doing probably 75 to 80% listening and 20% speaking. There's a reason we teach two different courses, one of them being the communication skills, one of them being the active listening skills. What we are trying to say there essentially is these are two different skill sets. You can't count on the skills that work for you as a listener to work for you as a speaker because, as you know, as a listener, there's certain things that you want to see and that you want to hear. Back to our point before, if we're encompassing the same listener tactics at the front of that room, odds are we're not going to be perceived in the same way. But it all starts with what am I doing right now and what might my audience actually want to see? It's really hard to take that scope sometimes of what I'm doing that works for me may not necessarily be what works for and is conducive and effective for my audience. 9 times out of 10, that's the question we have to ask ourselves because they're the ones trying to absorb that information, make decisions, give us approval, or whatever it may be. We can't give that to ourselves. So no matter what skills we feel are working for us, we have to take that second to analyze who's in that room and what exactly are they looking for?
And then I think that translates into, now that we have this first step of self-assessment or some form of assessment, then the next question everybody always asks is, how long does it take for these skills to start to feel good? I wish there was an easier answer. Do it for 2 weeks and they'll start to become natural. But we all know the reality of that is not as simple as just giving a time frame or an amount of hours. So, from both of your perspectives, when you get clients that ask you that, how do you respond? What do you tell them?
It's funny, Jen. John and I were sitting in the airport waiting for our flight out after our session last week, and one of the comments we got was, it was an excellent training. John and Matt both used the skills 100% of the time. And we looked at each other, and one of the things we said was, well, that's an awesome comment, but I think we both use the skills 100% of our life. And I think that's one of those big things that occurs is it's gonna feel funky for a long time, and it depends on the exact skill that it is and where your habit lies currently. It's not a one size fits all approach. It's the reason we say that if you aren't using these skills on the back end after our course, you're likely losing them. The more that you stick to it and the more that you're using them in your everyday life outside of that business role, the quicker that that is going to occur. Again, we don't all have 30, 45 minutes, a full hour every single day to go through and film ourselves in video. But when we stand at the checkout counter at the grocery store, we can stand with our hands at our sides. When we are sitting talking to our kids, making their breakfast in the morning, we can utilize that eye contact and that skill of focus that we talk about. All of these little things, to your point, Jen, not one size fits all, but it really does depend on how much time we're putting in outside of that formal environment.
Yeah. In a perfect world, Matt and I were saying we use these skills 100% of the time, 100% of the time. They've just become part of your identity. And the way that you learn how to tie your shoes, as an example, you get to a point where you no longer think about it. You're just doing the thing. You're tying your shoes. You don't think, okay, on this day, I'm going to tie my shoes loop over loop. And on this day, I'm going to pull the bunny through, the ear through. You just do it. You do the thing. But there's a level of learning, and this goes back to the learning curve, Jen, that you highlighted, where people feel like, John, am I getting worse before I'm getting better? You might feel that way, but this goes back to receiving feedback. In Matt and I heard it both in our individual groups last week with shout out Miller Wells. But they said the participant, the person being video recorded, said, I felt my eyes jumping, or I felt like my pace was a little quick, or I feel like fill in the blank. And I would ask, or Matt would ask as the coach, audience, did we see or hear that? And the audience response was, no, not really. So this is where all of a sudden you become so self-aware of the skills. You're beginning to make some corrections in the moment. You're so mindful of these things. Your audience may not even be aware of it, which is a beautiful place to be, because that means that curve is starting to shift from conscious competence into unconscious competence. And I know if you go back to previous episodes, you've heard me talk about the competency model. But the end goal for all of us with any skills that we develop would be to get to a state of unconscious competence. This is where things are automatic, they're on autopilot, and you, as the person doing the habit, you're really not thinking about it. It's just part of who you are, it's part of your identity. That takes time. And that's the hardest thing for participants to hear, is you just have to be patient. Be mindful of the skills, use them as often as you can. As Matt said, I like to call it chasing easy or cheap reps. This means do the skills when you're really not even needing to do the skills, but you're mindful of them. It's not that the checkout person at Starbucks or at your local Kroger is going to be thinking about it. Your kids certainly won't be mindful of what is dad or mom doing with their eye contact. This looks like focus. They won't think about it through that lens, but you get really cheap, easy repetitions to start to play with the skills. And the more you do that, the more automatic these things become when the lights are on, or you do have a little bit more skin in the game, or you consider a talk to be a bit more high stakes. These things are just part of you and they happen on their own.
And it's just little adjustments over and over throughout the day, every week. I have kind of a janky neck, and every time I travel, I could sleep on a new pillow. I feel like Princess and the Pea sometimes. But so consistently, I'll be sitting at my computer working on days I'm not coaching, and probably every hour I think about, okay, put your, kind of do like a chin tuck and stretch your neck out, put your shoulders back, stand up. But the more I do these things over and over throughout the day, the better I end up feeling at the end of the day. Now, did that happen the first time the chiropractor told me that I should be doing this? No. It took me longer than it should have for me to start forcing myself to do these things, remembering to do these things, and then just making it a habit. But now I do it all the time. And so start small. It doesn't matter what your thing is, but pick one thing, and for that day, focus on using that eye contact in every interaction you're in, whether it's stopping in the hall and talking to somebody at dinner, with friends, whatever the piece is. But the more you purposely find places to practice that, the easier those things will start to get.
And we have this term in coaching that we use. It's 1% every day. We're not looking for you to climb that mountain all at once. If you went to Mount Everest, there's multiple base camps. What we're looking for is for you to create that 1% every day, because I promise you that there's going to be people in that organization that on day one, they're saying, hey, there could be some communicational changes there. They could invoke some changes. And they may not notice that 1% every day, but on day 100, they're going to notice how clean and fluid those skills look.
And there's a reason you don't get dropped off at the top of Mount Everest. You wouldn't be able to survive up there. You don't give yourself an acclimation period to get comfortable being on the top of the mountain with altitude and elevation and everything else. So this is where patience comes back in. What small incremental changes can you be mindful of? But how can you show up every single day? And this pulls back to the James Clear quote that we cited from the beginning of the podcast here. Ask yourself, what are the things that you can do and stick to even on your toughest days? And that's where you set some accurate goals, I think, some realistic goals, but make sure you can show up there. Then, as you start to develop the skills and you begin to shift them into habits, get creative, start to make some bigger tweaks and changes if that's what you feel comfortable with. But as Jen mentioned, it's really small iterations at the start that end up having a profound impact on progress, on success, on development. These are all things I promise you an audience will see and hear. Even if you may not feel a significant change happening internally, it's going to be noticed externally.
And when we break it down to incremental change, another thing that that's doing for us, and I like to think about this as we were at Learn to Skate with a 3-year-old kid that my brother's fiance babysits about a week and a half ago. And one of the main things we said was, you have to keep it fun. When somebody's learning something, as soon as your body says, this is no longer fun, this is very hard, I'm not enjoying this, you shut down and you no longer want to do it. The same thing happens with communications. As soon as your body shuts down and says, I can't remember those skills, I can't think about all these things at once, I'm super nervous and I'm flustered, life gets a lot harder. But like John said, when you can make it incremental, you can make it daily, you can make it small, those easier bite-sized chunks add up to a little bit more and mentally you feeling a bit better about that progress that's occurring.
Yeah, and it's about simple. I know I mentioned this at the beginning of all my courses, but I say the skills that we are going to introduce to you are simple on purpose. Simple isn't always easy, but simple over complex. To Matt's point, simple skills can be fun. They can be easy, they can be relatable, people understand them. Complex might be interesting and unique at times, but my confidence in a participant's ability to repeat complex skills over and over diminishes quickly. Where if I can give you something simple to work on, to practice, to apply, you make it your own. Going back to what I said earlier, it's about being yourself and authentic and genuine. Don't be me in the front of the room, be you in the front of the room, but you utilizing the skills. But as soon as that happens and people can start doing things simply, that's where a ton of progress is seen on the back end. Because being able to show up day 2, day 5, day 30, day 60, before you know it, you're 300 days in repeating a very simple skill set. And you start to say to yourself, there was a point where I didn't think I could get here, but here I am 300 days later. And Jed, you can attest to this with your Spanish speaking. You're on year what, 3, 4 now?
I haven't missed a day.
Yeah, there you
And that's
go.
through the
But it's
first
about
year of
creating,
infant
right?
life too. You know, it may have been 11:30 p.m., but I was going to get that 5-minute lesson in no matter what.
Simple systems, and those simple systems really are what end up creating true long-term habit creation or long-term change in a skill set you're looking to shift.
Yeah, and as both of you said, simple and fun are, I would say, vital in creating a new habit. And I think it was a podcast with James Clear and Tim Ferriss, I want to say, but I believe it was Tim Ferriss was talking about meditation. And, you know, a lot of people want to be able to meditate, but they start with picking a 15 or a 20-minute meditation practice, and on day one, try to sit down and do it for 15 minutes. And you feel like a huge failure because for people who have not been practicing it and honing that skill, 15 minutes to sit there and not think about a single thing is near impossible. And so he had mentioned when I first started meditating, I told myself 30, 60 seconds. And then the next step was pick some type of a 2.5-minute song and start with that. When I started doing ice baths in the morning, it was 40 degrees inside. I hate being wet and I hate being cold. So those two things for me, especially at 6:30 in the morning to start my day, sounded like terrible options. I knew the long-term effects of it would be helpful and they were going to be great for me. And so I said, I'm going to do it. But I started with 60 seconds in there first. And then as soon as I did that for a couple days and I felt like, okay, this is doable, then I moved it to 90 seconds. And then it was 2.5 minutes, and I'm at 3 minutes now, easy. I don't need to go above 3 minutes because I really don't get any benefits after that. But starting little by little, if on day one I sat down in a 39-degree ice bath and said, I have to be in here for 3 minutes, one, not fun, two, not doable. So the chances of me doing that again the next morning, slim to none.
And it's this idea of graded exposure. But any of our participants who are listening to the podcast who have been through sessions with us, you can quickly resonate. Our first video recording is you talking for 60 seconds. If our first video recording was you up there talking for 5 minutes, 7 minutes, 10 minutes, it wouldn't be a real fun experience. And you would start to think, what am I doing? I'm up here way too long. I don't know what I should be doing. I don't know what I could be doing. There's a reason why our longest video recording happens on day two, but it's graded exposure. And it's giving people little bits and pieces of feel the skills, let them happen, come back, see what you find. But if you can decide to stick with something, again, your point, ice baths, it's anything out there in life. I think small incremental steps are what are keys to success in terms of long form habit creation.
And John, the funniest part of it, of you mentioning that portion right there, is our last video on day one is a single slide, typically 30, 45 seconds. And I would say 99% of our participants, if you were to ask them, would say that that is the hardest video of the 2 days. They come back in on the morning, and that long talk is leaps and bounds easier than anything else they've done because they're not thinking about everything. And John, just like you're saying, it's don't shock them all at once and let them build their way up, because once they can mentally get there, it gets a bit easier. When I was getting back down to that mile time of under 6 minutes, I knew that if I set that treadmill to 10 the first time I stepped on it, I would probably be laying on the ground in a pile of free weights because I got sent off the back of it. But again, moving my way up through those speeds and getting back into where we're looking to be makes life a whole lot easier on day two.
Yeah. And you need to have those incremental wins, because if you're not winning while you're practicing implementing something new, I think Matt, you had mentioned, you're not going to do it again. If you're not having fun, if you're not feeling like you're making progress, if you're not feeling successful, and most often it's because people take too big of a jump. If you make smaller jumps over time, you look back a month later and realize, wow, I have lost 10 pounds. I didn't try to lose 10 pounds in a week because that's really hard and really unfun. But instead, I lost, I mean, 10 pounds in a month would be amazing, but 10 pounds in a month is a lot more doable. So setting smaller aspirations over a longer point of time and bumping it up to the next level when you feel like, okay, this is second nature now. I've got this. I'm consistently making this happen or being successful with it, then up the ante a little bit. Make it a little more complicated or apply it in other places too. But I think the biggest part, you have to have fun with it. You have to get those small wins, and you have to be realistic about what it is you are setting for this particular goal.
Yeah, the human psyche isn't built to just continue to see loss after loss after loss. So if you don't identify what you will qualify as a win, it's a really long process and probably a very unenjoyable process for you to say, okay, am I actually making progress? But this is going back to things that we've talked about, assessment, it's setting realistic goals, smart goals, if you want to call them that. It's receiving feedback, it's making sure you monitor and you're mindful of the skills. But all of these things pay dividends on the back end, and that's where you really start to notice compound growth in whatever the skill might be.
And John, that was an awesome recap of what we just covered. So I'm going to leave that as our recap to our episode here. Of course, for any of our listeners, if you have more questions on habit building in relation to communication skills, please reach out and you are welcome to respond to the podcast email that goes out if you are part of our newsletter. And we would be happy to give you any other recommendations moving forward. As always, if there's anything else you would like to hear on an upcoming podcast, please let us know and we will get that topic into a rotation. Thanks so much and see you next month. Thanks for listening to the Speak As Well As You Think podcast brought to you by Vautier Communications. Again, I am your host, Jen Alex. Vautier Communications is in the business of business communication skills. We coach and train both individuals and groups on how to elevate their presence and increase their impact through the way they communicate, present, and write. If you want to learn more about our in-person or virtual training options, visit our website at www.vautiercommunications.com. Thanks for listening.